I'm Curtis Bowers, and this is Agenda Weekly. Thank you so much for joining me again this week. I really appreciate it. As you can see, I'm on the road again. And I'd just like to thank all the subscribers for being supportive of what we do. That allows me to travel and speak and try to wake up the troops as much as possible and influence others to start engaging in what's going on in our country. And we love doing that, but without your funding, we wouldn't be able to do that. Those watching on Rumble, please like and follow. That helps us a lot. And I want to especially remind you subscribers that if you go to your dashboard at agendaweekly.com, you can go back and look through all the past episodes. There's about 165 of them. A lot of great topics, a lot of great content. If you've joined sometime since we started, there's probably episodes you haven't seen or didn't have time to see at the time, but flip back through there and you'll see a lot of things that, as I was doing that the other day, I saw a lot of topics that are so important right now. They were back then too, but they're even more important now. So I hope you'll take advantage of that. Today, it's going to be called The Great Big Takeover of Everything. It's important to understand what's going on. Otherwise, it's just the blind leading the blind. It's confusion, but that's what I'm going to talk about today, trying to put some key pieces of the puzzle together and talk about three huge threats that we're facing right now. One of them I know you're aware of, and we'll talk about that briefly, but it's really serious. But two are threats that I think most people don't know about or don't think about very often. And so that's what we're going to cover today. But thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate it. One key piece of history that you need to understand to be able to understand what I'm going to talk about as I get into all the bigs, big government, big pharma, big ag, big tech, and some of those things showing how they all work together. They all have a similar agenda, and it's basically the same people controlling all of those. But all communists today, they're fascist, really a classical fascist at heart. Because of the Soviet experiment from 1917 to 1991, all communists realized something that we kind of knew all along. Big government cannot run all the businesses because they don't know how to do that. They don't have the expertise. They don't have the ability to do that. And so they saw, as the Soviet Union was always struggling even to survive, they look over what Hitler was doing with National Socialism there, which was a twin of what they were doing, except he was smart enough to go, no, we're going to let Mercedes and Volkswagen and those different big companies, let them do the business thing. They will fund us. We will pass laws so they don't have any competition, and then we can keep this thing going. That's why they weren't collapsing economically. At the beginning, they were doing quite well because they were smart enough to do it that way. In the Soviet Union, where they took all the businesses, and then the Stalins and all those type of people were starting to appoint communists to run them, it just ground itself down into the ground because it takes expertise and experience and drive and everything to make something succeed and continue forward. So, but Lenin also told us a key piece of the puzzle. He said, socialism is the road to communism. Why is that? Well, it's a really important thing to understand, and it explains why all the bigs in America, the big things I talked about, they're all getting bigger and stronger because of this very concept here. He said, you can't go from free enterprise to communism because in a free enterprise system, the people own all the means of production, all the property, all the wealth, all the employees, they have so much power, it's hard to force communism on them because they can fight back. So if you slowly transition from free enterprise to kind of crony capitalism and then slowly slide into socialism where the government slowly gets all the levers of power, then it's easy to become totalitarian. It's easy to have total control because the government's already in charge of energy. It's already in charge of education. It's already in charge of the media. It's already in charge of, you know, most of the jobs, and or they have connections to the big businesses. So the big business, like we saw in COVID, will say, yeah, there's a COVID vaccine mandate. And anyone that doesn't get it is fired. So the government has this tremendous power, even though supposedly, oh, it's a free country. You didn't have to take it. But they convinced big business, do what we say, and they say, okay, we'll do it. And so it's totalitarian while it still looks like it is free. So basically, summarizing that, the elites and the globalists and the bankers and all that realized, even in a free society, if we work to control everything and make everything big and powerful so it's hard to compete against, then even though it's a free society, we're going to have so much control by eliminating all competition against us. And John D. Rockefeller, as I've said before, his famous quote, competition is a sin. It was a sin in their playbook. It's something they cannot allow. And that's what we see today. So I'm going to go through a list of a lot of the big things in America that you know about, but why they're so instrumental, why they're so key in giving them just unbelievable amounts of control, even though we're still a free society in some respects. And but this is why they've done that. It really is sobering as I look at the list that I'm getting ready to go through with you, but the elites control all of these things, and these are the foundations of our entire society. Of course, big government. They finance the, representatives they want to get in there. They fund them. They make sure that their media stations and their all their contacts are supporting them as well. So they get the people in power they want to be in power and bribe the other ones once they get in there. So they kind of control this mechanism, big government, that has its hands in everything, all the different institutions. Then you got big pharma, okay? Toxic drugs, toxic shots. And they're suppressing anything that is really healthy, really helpful. They don't want that. They don't want to find a cure for cancer, obviously. That's a money machine for them. But then fitting right in with big pharma is big ag, where then you have this huge system that creates food that is toxic. It's not healthy to be eating. And so farming has toxic practices. And then all the GMO products and the things they're doing. So you look at it and you're like, these two things are both deadly to people, but they feed off of each other. If you eat that processed garbage food, you're going to be sick more often. So you need more pharmaceuticals. And if you need more pharmaceuticals, you're going to have more health issues. So you need more pharmaceuticals. So I mean, just they both feed the circle. You got big tech. Technology, whether it's social media or AI or transhumanism and all the different things coming with that. Big tech is now playing a much bigger role than the past because of the advancements, where they can manipulate us, they can send messages to us, they can chastise us in the public square on the different social media platforms if we don't say exactly what they want us to say. So they're slowly teaching everybody, do what we say, or you're going to pay. And people are rushing, oh, okay, sorry. You have Big Med, which incorporates all of this, but that's the medical industrial complex. But that's the medical industry, really, to me. That's the doctors and the hospitals. And of course, since they control all the universities that teach the doctors are in line to push the pharmaceuticals as the solutions to the problem instead of anything healthy or whatever. So again, it just keeps spinning. And then the hospitals have become money machines, and it just keeps going. Big Ed, of course, the K through 12 system and then higher education, those were all captured because they affect everything. Because during those, 17 years, you have the students 7 hours a day, you're able to program them to think big pharma, big ag, big tech. The medical industrial complex and all the other things are wonderful. And they're the best thing that's ever happened. And they've saved so many lives or whatever. And so, and big government is wonderful. And on it goes. So that's a key thing. Big finance. I mean, that's, the Federal Reserve, which is always manipulating the currencies and the Wall Street corruption with all the derivatives, all the things they do there to corruptly make a huge profit. And in the instances sometimes that they don't, they claim we're too big to fail, and they ask the government to bail them out, which they do, so we end up paying for that. It's just a corrupt system. One thing I want to stop right here and explain for a minute, because it's so important, is why big government and big business love inflation. Now, a lot of people go, no, they don't like that. Yes, they love it. Here's why. Big government doesn't want too much inflation because people might get mad and start, oh, what's going on? But they always act like it's way lower than it actually is, and they want it that way because when you're borrowing trillions and trillions of dollars each year, you want there to be inflation. So when you pay those dollars back 30, 40, 50 years from now, it's nothing. Like in Zimbabwe today, their dollar was almost equal with America's dollar 50 years ago before the communists took them over when it was Rhodesia. Okay? You could buy a cup of coffee for 50 cents and you could buy it for 50 cents in America. Today in Rhodesia, which is now Zimbabwe, they changed the name so you wouldn't know how destructive the communists had been to that wonderful country. It's $1 trillion for a cup of coffee. They've had enough inflation. So if you would have been $1 trillion in debt, back in the 70s, which would have been like $1 trillion of our dollars, today you'd pay it back with, you get paid more than that an hour in a normal job. So that's why they love inflation. And big business is buried in debt as well. So yeah, you keep stuff going up. And they can always just raise their prices so it doesn't cost them anything, but it makes the debt, the huge amounts of debt they have, just keep shrinking every year. If your money's losing 10% of its value each year, then the debts you have are going down. In reality, they're 10% less than what they were each year that goes by, if you can keep inflation at 10%. So that's something a lot of people don't understand, but that's why they do that. That's why they've always manipulated it to keep going up 5, 6, 7% a year, even when they tell us it's 2 or 3. It's never been under 5% in the last 100 years, and you can tell that because things have gone up about 120 times. So you start doing the math on how much is that a year, and you see, oh, it's not 2% a year, like they say. The big military industrial complex, of course, which big intel really goes with that, all the three-letter agencies and stuff. That, of course, government controls that, but everybody is involved with that. Big business is really the one, if you study the last 100 years, they're the primary ones deciding where the military battles are going to take place and what countries to dethrone the leadership there and stuff, because they want to go in and pillage the resources of these countries. And Smedley Butler, in his famous book, War is a Racket, talked about that. He said, all I fought for my entire 40-year career, or however long it was, in the Marines, is for big business to be able to go rape all the resources of the world. And so that's where that stands. Of course, with big media, and again, all the same people are the primary owners of all these things, they're able to control the narrative and attack and belittle and character assassinate anyone who doesn't go along to get along. So that ties into that, and of course, big tech's with that now, because that's become one of the primary ways of sharing information and everything. And then you get to the big banks and big business that are too big to fail. So they can't lose, because when the Wells Fargo's or the Bank of America or the JP Morgan Chase, when they make bad investments and lose money, where, hey, we're going to crumble, we've seen it many times over our life, the government steps in and gives them billions and billions of dollars to bail them out, and things keep moving forward. Big government regulates almost all of those industries as well. So that gives them some leverage over those industries to make sure, again, they can do their own thing some, but they need to help big government get bigger, and they need to help big government, accomplish its goals. And so they do that because they're all benefiting from that. Now, the three key issues right now that are trying to finish the course so they have total global control. And it's intentional destruction. I have to always emphasize that. It's not naive ignorance, people that just don't have a clue. It's people that know what they're doing. The number one issue right now that's obvious to all of us, of course, is the open borders. And the reason big government loves that is it moves votes into the country for their unpopular ideas. And it creates dependency in everyone. Not only the people coming in, they're totally dependent. They have no way of providing for themselves because they don't even speak the language. So there's zero chance they can get a job, zero chance they can make it. So they're not going to, and that's not the plan. But so they're dependent. But then all of us that are working so hard, we have to pay all of their bills. When they go to the doctor in the hospital and have a baby, we have to pay for that. When their kids are in the school system, we have to pay for that. Their $2,200 a month they get on their debit cards, we have to pay for that. And their cell phones and all the different things, we have to pay for that. And so it's the classic Cloward and Piven strategy I talked about in Agenda Grinding America Down. It's the way you use the weight of the poor to collapse the system. And that's all that is about. But it's accelerating. They say by the next inauguration day, just a year from now, there'll have been 14 million illegals that have come in since Biden took office. 14 million. It's like three new states of Alabama, but three new entire states that no one's working. No one's doing anything. So you got to pay the electric bill and you got to pave the roads for them and you've got to pay their cell bills and everything else. So it's really significant. Watch this little few minute clip from Tucker Carlson. He had a special this week on it and I have the link to that below. But it was sobering even to me who has studied this because as you see it, you realize no, this is an invasion and it's purposeful and it's to make sure we can never recover from it.
Story of history is the story of invasions. One group of people moving into someone else's land and taking it. One nation ends, another begins. Invasions drive history. Few Americans understand this is happening to them right now. The United States of America is being invaded. Last year alone, over 3 million people came here illegally just over our southern border. The media won't tell you it's happening. But if you look around, you can see it, and you can see it most clearly in our cities, which are collapsing. Take a look at our cities. They're hellish, and immigration is the reason. The city of Chicago was in tough shape even before Joe Biden opened the border. Now, parts of it are basically uninhabitable. Even the socialist mayor of Chicago says the city is breaking under the strain. That wasn't Texas along the Rio Grande. It was Chicago, more than 1,000 miles from the Mexican border. That's what many parts of America look like now. New York is the largest city in the United States, this country's financial center. The waves of illegal immigration have transformed it. Every neighborhood in the city feels it. The Upper West Side of Manhattan isn't a financial center, and it's not a slum. It's a place where middle-class and upper-middle-class families live and have for more than 100 years. But it's been totally overturned by the migrant wave. Illegal aliens have been placed at public expense in hotels. The families who live nearby are terrorized. Some have moved. Businesses in the neighborhood have been destroyed. You live in America, the place you grew up, the place you'd like to see your children grow up, in much the way that you did. But that won't be possible because of the single greatest sellout in our history. Hundreds of years of America eliminated by an invasion that our leaders made possible.
It's really clear as you look at those things. Yes, it's of course purposeful, but it's creating the conditions for America to fall because it's diluting the patriotism. It's just overburdening the system. And at some point it will collapse or there'll be a civil war because as more and more come in, if they're able to fudge another election and get another 14, 20 million in the next 4 years where you start to get, 40, 50, 60 million people here, of course the system's going to collapse. But at some point, some people might say, enough is enough. I'm not doing this. And then it ends in the Civil War, which of course they would love for that to happen too. The second area I want to talk about is from a documentary that's been going around. You might have seen it, but I think it's very significant. It's called The Great Taking. And it's something that makes sense as you watch the film and you see the research that has been done to uncover a scheme they've been working behind the scenes to eventually get everything from us. It makes total sense because what's their number one goal for 2030? You'll own nothing and you'll be happy, right? It's like a big joke, but I saw this and I go, this might be the vehicle. Because I've always wondered, how do you do that? You know, when we own everything, how are you going to get everything without a civil war, without us stopping you from taking it? But anyway, it's pretty incredible. But I want to play a clip from this and just listen very carefully as he explains some of this. It's so important. I have the link to the entire documentary below. But if you don't have time to watch that, I want you to at least see part of it here as he explains what he observed as he was involved in these systems and started to realize, wait a minute, they have changed the way things have always been done to something very different. Watch this and I'll talk about it.
In 2008, I noticed the first failure of a broker-dealer. So I was expecting there to be a lot of insolvencies. I was paying attention. And the thing that shocked me was that the client accounts in this broker-dealer were encumbered in the bankruptcy estate of the broker. That never could have happened before. In all of the history of securities, they were personal property. And if the broker failed, you would say, I'm sorry, you're out of business. Here's where you can transfer my assets. That did not happen in this case. So I started digging into what could possibly have changed. And this was as serious as a heart attack, given that we were going into this meltdown at that time. That's when I discovered it had been done through changes to the Uniform Commercial Code in the United States. This had been done in all 50 states. So it was something that could be done very quietly over a long period of time and did not have to be done at the federal level, didn't draw attention. What they did was to create a new legal construct of a security entitlement. Now, prior to this, as I said, securities for 400 years were personal property. This concept of a security entitlement severed that. That's its purpose. So what people then have in institutions and pension funds, even sophisticated investors, all they have is an entitlement. It's a claim. It's a contractual claim, which is very weak in the event of insolvency. So it's an appearance of ownership. It's sometimes referred to as beneficial ownership, which sounds nice, but what it means is that you receive dividends, you receive a proxy, you are the owner of title. You can, of course, you can buy it and sell it, but you can see in documents that I've found that the legal owner is actually the entity that controls the security with a security interest. They are the legal owners of the property. So now you have a contractual claim. Next, all of the securities are held in pooled form. So you have no specific identification. It used to be that with paper certificates, they were numbered. You had a specific numbered bond or stock share certificate. So now they're fungible. Fungible bulk, book entry form, pooled. Further, we know, and it is absolutely irrefutable from the Fed's own response to a questionnaire from the EU, that even segregated accounts, even people or institutions that have been told that their securities are segregated, are in the same pool and entitled to only a pro rata share in the event of an insolvency of the custodian. So again, segregation is just an appearance. People are told that it's an absolute subterfuge. And the shocking thing is that even sophisticated institutional investors do not understand this, or they don't want to know it. Further, even if fraud, outright fraud, is committed by the custodian, that does not obviate the ability of the secured creditors to take the securities from these pools ahead of the people who thought they owned them. Then there was, in 2005, a change to the bankruptcy law in the United States, creating something called safe harbor. Again, that sounds nice, but what safe harbor means is safe harbor for the secured creditors to take the client assets and to make that absolutely certain that even in the event of fraud, they will take the client assets. So prior to this change in bankruptcy law, there is something called fraudulent transfer, fraudulent conveyance. And the trustee, the bankruptcy trustee, had a duty to claw back any assets that had been fraudulently transferred. So this change was made in 2005. And then with the failure of Lehman Brothers, this was cemented in case law. And we can see the judgment by the bankruptcy court related to this. What happened there was that JP Morgan was both the custodian for the client assets and the secured creditor that took the client assets, which prior to 2005, everything that happened there would have been constructively fraudulent. But the bankruptcy judge, this is the Southern District of New York, which is Manhattan, found in favor of JP Morgan that JP Morgan absolutely was entitled to take the client assets. The only question was whether JP Morgan was an entitled person, basically, to take the client assets. This is an important point because it's not all secured creditors that have this power to take the client assets. It is only the very biggest banks that are entitled to take the client assets. So they don't want anyone else elbowing in there to take anything. Only they will take them. And in this judgment, the judge asked the question, is JP Morgan a member of the protected class? Used explicitly those words and said quite obviously, as one of the biggest banks in the world, the biggest financial institutions, JP Morgan is quite obviously a member of the protected class. To see this in a bankruptcy case law from the court, I think that's pretty strong stuff. It's like that document directly from the Fed provided to the Legal Certainty Group. This is hard to refute. A custodian has the records of who owns what. It's in their books and records, but that's all it is. It is the records. The system has been changed so that the property itself is then transferred up to a higher level and held in pooled form. So you deal with your broker to execute a trade to buy or sell something, and you get a representation of an account that shows you what you have in it. But the assets are not held, even at what you think is your custodian. It's transferred to a higher level. In the U.S., that is the Depository Trust Corp, which holds all securities in the United States in pooled form. So the brokers themselves are low down in the food chain. In Europe, there are central security depositories at the national level that give an appearance of a registry of ownership at the national level. But by law, under something called the Central Security Depository Regulation, CSDR, which was imposed in 2014, by law, these securities are transferred by a mandatory link to an international Central Securities Depository. So they want cross-border mobility of the collateral to occur.
That might be something you need to watch a couple of times or watch the whole documentary to really get a grasp on it. But it's such an important point. Personal property being confiscated to save the biggest banks is what that was talking about. He was talking about Lehman Brothers, the example that we all lived through not that long ago. When they went into bankruptcy, here's what he was saying if it didn't make total sense. J.P. Morgan Chase had loaned them some money and they go bankrupt, but they had sold stock to thousands and thousands of people, but those stock certificates were still on their ledger because of the different laws that were passed that allow them to do that. And so when they went bankrupt, JP Morgan Chase, the Rockefeller Bank, was legally able to go in and seize all the assets, including all the stocks and bonds and things they had sold to other people. Even when you totally paid for it, hey, I bought 1,000 shares of whatever, and you got your certificates, they still held the deed. And they got it all. And it was okayed by a judge in court saying, no, they are a protected class, as you heard him talk about. That's a specific legal term for the biggest banks and the biggest players. They're a protected class. They cannot lose. So if they have to confiscate other people's assets that were once tied to different businesses that have gone out of business or whatever, they can do that. And they did do that. So this isn't a conspiracy theory or, well, I don't think they'd ever get away with that. They did already get away with that. That's really sobering. Watch this other just short clip about the 1930s, how that same thing was done back then and how successful it was. This is nothing new, but they're gaining ground in the way they're changing the laws to make it legal for them to take even things you've already completely paid for.
This is something like what happened in the 1930s when there was distress globally everywhere due to debt levels. And you would think that there were no winners, but there were, because the banks that were controlled by the Federal Reserve, for example, in the US, were slated to survive. 9,000 banks in the United States were forced into failure. The people who had money in those banks lost all their cash, but their debts were not canceled. Their debts were then consolidated into the Federal Reserve System and enforced. So people that were in debt were in trouble. Even wealthy people lost everything. The difference this time around is they're not going after just property that is encumbered by debt. They've engineered this so they can take things, all securities as collateral, from people and entities that have no borrowings against them. They own them clear and outright. Now, let me give you an example as an analogy to explain the horror of this. So you have bought a car and you paid cash for it. You think you're being very conservative. You have no debt against the car. But unbeknownst to you, the dealer continues to control your car as collateral. You're not told this. The dealer uses your car and all the other cars sold by the dealer as collateral for his borrowing in his business. Now, the dealer goes bust, and only certain secured creditors are empowered to immediately take your car and all the cars ever sold by the dealer without any judicial review immediately. When I describe this to people, they get worried about their cars. This is not about your car. This is an analogy for what has been done. It's much worse than this being about your car, because it is literally about the entire securities complex globally. So it is not about your insolvency that causes the loss of your assets. It's the insolvency of the people that secretly used your collateral as their property without telling you that or disclosing it.
Anyway, it's a very shocking information, but it totally makes sense. But that's where we are. But just like in the 1930s, I mean, when the banks closed and you lost all your money, that did not erase your debts. That's incredible. That's what happened back then to make the rich, mainly the Rockefellers, super rich, and to be able to control everybody and the Carnegies and the J.P. Morgans and everything. But that corrupt system, and most all the little banks went under, and so there was just a few big ones left. Well, that's all this is about today. There's just a few big banks, and they're slowly trying to crush all the little ones, but anyway, I saw that this week and I thought, oh my goodness, we need to talk about that, because again, they're just changing everything as rapidly as they can because they have a 2030 agenda to take us down by then. And they're in earnest about that. They're working at it, and we need to fight against it. We need to stand against it. We need to pray that God foils their plans and exposes their lies. But that's what's going on. And the last and third and final threat is one you know about, but it's China. But I heard a guy talk about it this week with some details that even sobered me a little bit on how earnest they are in that and how they are going to do whatever necessary. And they feel like now it's before 2030 in their time frame. They think they can take us. The original goal was 100 years from 1949. That was the year the communists took over China, and they say within 100 years, and they said it at that time, we will take over America. That's how they plan ahead and have a vision and have a goal. You know, we can't go 100 days and stick with something. But they have in recent years said, no, no, we're not going to need to 2049. And so anyway, listen to this short clip of a guy talking about that, because it was some great information we need to remember to be, live soberly, because there is so much going on right now to take us down. We need to be prepared in every way possible. Financially, we need to be prepared to defend our families, our neighbors, because I feel with the deep state, the globalist, wanting to use all these bigs to collapse the system and get control, and then these communist enemies that are propped up by all these bigs and the elites of the world and the bankers of the world, they're setting the stage so they'll be able to do this.
I'm going to walk you through their plans. There's a fellow, he's a lifetime China dove, Michael Pillsbury. He was part of opening China in 1971. And all his life he was a China dove. He came out in 2015, said, I've been wrong my whole life. China has a 100-year plan, started in 1949, to upend us and displace us as the world's hegemon and reduce us to a vassal state by 2049. A book, 1999, and it's supposed to run from 1949 to 2049. Two colonels in the late 90s wrote a book called Unrestricted Warfare. We don't understand warfare the same way. They see it as diplomatic, economic and financial, network-centric, the ability to collapse networks, terrorism. And then the fifth and last is classic warfare, what we understand with bullets flying. So we don't understand we're at war. And lastly, there was a man in China. Imagine somebody being both the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, the Secretary of Defense, and the Vice Chairman of the Democratic Party, and we're in a one-party state. Imagine a man had that position, Chur Haotian, in China. In 2003, he resigned, and he gave a speech that leaked, thanks to the wonderful Epoch Times, which is the fourth largest and absolutely the best newspaper in America. And anyway, they published it in 08. It's never been disputed by China. And it's his retirement speech. It was classified, but it got leaked by some honest person of Zhen. That someday they're going to use, that they are, we're living in a world, two tigers can't live on one mountain, we'll eventually have to take down the United States, we'll use bioweapons to destabilize, a civil war will come. Anyone who thinks a civil war looks like Red Dawn, you don't get it. That's not what it looks like. It looks like The Walking Dead, but take away the zombies. In 2 weeks, we go into collapse that we can't get out of. It doesn't unravel. It's all been war-gamed out, and the lessons were captured in a book called One Second After. The cartels and blue helmets are given 3 years to pillage, loot, rape, and burn. Occupation is by 2049. In 2010, they publicly accelerated the target to 2030. They are now saying it's 2028, maybe 2027. Deeds have already been issued in China on your homes. If you have a nice home in America, there's some Chinese colonel or general or CCP member who has a deed on your home. If you say come and take it, that's the Red Dawn attitude. They're not going to come and take it. What they're going to do is you're going to be in a Walking Dead situation. They've modeled it out. When that happens, 90% of you die in 1 year. You die from food, fuel, and pharmaceutical collapse. 50% of people over 50 are walking around on pharmaceuticals you die within 6 months of. There's only 30 days of pharmaceutical in the supply chain. There's 3 days of food at the tip of the supply chain in the cities. 3 days in, we start going into civil disorder. 2 weeks, we go through a tipping point. It's fifth generation warfare. You don't know who you're fighting. We're fighting China. We don't know it. It turns into a civil war. It's all been modeled out. 90% die in 1 year. Then the cartels and the blue helmets come in to stop the race war or something. And that's the plan. The coming party line is basically the greatest civilization on earth was in depression for 2,500 years. They fell into a depression. The West took advantage of them. They emerged and pulled the rug out from under the greatest hegemon in history. They liquidate everyone. Sorry, black people, you're the first of all. All black people get exterminated. They keep 30 million alive as white, as slaves, 30 million whites, liquidate the rest, and are to be spread on fields. That, if that all sounds crazy, read their literature. Read these books I'm putting up. I'm not making this up. This is their literature. So the org chart of what you're up against is China, Iran, Cuba, Venezuela, and the Mexican cartels. The Mexican cartels report to the Venezuelan cartel. It's called the cartel, the Venezuelan cartel. You know what it is? It's the Venezuelan government. It's Venezuela is where cartel mafia turns into nation state. There's a pattern of genocide you were being walked through. Polarization, you know what that is. The Germans did it. We got to be afraid of that tuberculosis. We have these Jews among us, and they've got cousins, shtetl Jews, and we got to be worried. So you have to tribalize. They're going to have to wear yellow stars and social distance. Demonize them, except in this case, it's all COVID and MAGA and such. And then that's how you justify genocide. How to defeat their plan. Love and peace. Do not panic. If we get into a civil war, they win. And they're doing everything they can to drive us into it, to provoke it. Prep now, 30 days for food, fuel, and Florida pharmaceuticals, arms and bullets. Sic vis pacem parabellum. If you want peace, prepare for war. An armed society is a polite society, Robert Heinlein said. Well-ordered militias, in particular, in conjunction with your sheriff. Study the LDS. The Mormon Church has a very good neighborhood. They have really worked it out how to do this. And election integrity.
Anyway, some interesting points there. I have another documentary that goes into much more detail on that 100-year war. That's below as well. If you have time to watch some of these this week, you'll love them. They're powerful, informative, and well done, but they're really important. I mean, the Chinese are committed to taking us over. I knew that. I've always known that. And unlike any other people, though, they mean what they say. And if they don't reach their goal of the next few years, then they'll keep going after it. It'll be 2035, whatever, but it's not going away. And you see all the elites in our country, you know, the Biden administration and just all the companies that love their slave labor and everything, they're allowing them to come into this country in positions of power to influence our colleges and universities and TV stations and Hollywood and just to manipulate our representatives to do what's best for China instead of American. I mean, they're at all out war with us, unrestricted warfare. And we need to wake up to that. And I want to encourage you because it sobered me in this way. Make sure you're getting prepared if you're not. We've talked about it a lot a couple years ago with COVID, but we need to be reminded of that. You know, where you have food and supplies and medicines and stuff to last 2, 4, 6, 8, 10 months, slowly build up. If you don't have any, start with getting a week or two or three. But there's so many things. I think you need to be, you know, practicing with your target practice and things like that, which is a fun hobby anyway, and your hunting skills and different things. I feel like there's a good chance in our lifetime, these things, and maybe sooner than later, are actually going to happen. The things, it's never going to happen. It's impossible. It's, you know, this is America, whatever. But the more you study and dig in and see, man, they're just gaining ground like nobody's business. And nobody's standing against them. Just like the Tucker clip, he said, no one is trying to stop this hardly. There's some talk in Congress and stuff, but they're still coming in hundreds of thousands of illegals a month. And many of those are terrorists. Many of those are Chinese military age men. And so everything is set to have a crisis like we've never seen before. And we got the Bill Gates, you know, in their little labs plotting and planning whatever the next thing's going to be to cut world population. And so anyway, again, don't be fearful. God doesn't want us to be that way, but he wants us to stand with courage. But we need to embolden ourselves to go, okay, I live in sober times. I need to be sober minded and I need to be ready to stand if necessary to protect the innocents, to protect those I love and to protect those that are not capable of protecting themselves. And then be prepared for whatever might happen. God knows what's going to happen. He will help us through it. But we want to be, no, I did my part. I've got some things tucked away. And I've been thinking differently than I normally have, realizing things could change in a moment at some time, possibly in the near future. Maybe not, but they could. In this election year, like we've talked about, for a black swan to happen by our own government or whatever is very, very likely. But we have lots of enemies beyond our government as well. Anyway, our verse for this week is Isaiah 5:20. Woe unto them that call evil good and good evil, that put darkness for light and light for darkness, that put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter. That's what God says. We're on the side of right. And these people that are calling good evil, and they're putting out darkness in place of the light, we need to shine our lights and say, no, gracias, you will not do that on my watch. You will not violate my children in their purity and their innocence. You will not poison them with your toxic things you want to offer them. And we just got to, in every way possible, build what's there strong and secure to be able to endure the flood that's coming. We can see it. And so that we're ready for it. And then I know God will use us to share the gospel, to be a great light, and with his blessing, maybe turn things back to be living once again in a country that fears him and keeps his commandments. Sorry if this was a little heavy. I'm wound up tonight. Been talking to a lot of you in different places, and that's always something I love to do. But until next week, God bless you.
Welcome to Agenda Weekly. We invite you to join us for an overview of the news from a conservative Christian perspective. You may be familiar with a weekly video podcast from Curtis Bowers, but Agenda Weekly is much more than that. Every Friday, we provide a written summary of the most important news events from America and around the world. We don't just cover the bad news. We find the often overlooked encouraging stories, because we all need some good news. Additional resources include informative videos and articles to dig deeper, a featured hymn of the week, essential prayer points, and specific actions to take personally and in your community. For only $5 a month, less than a cup of coffee, you can subscribe to receive the most comprehensive news source available. Our goal is to save you time, expose the agenda behind the news, and equip you to make an impact right where you are. Subscribe today at agendaweekly.com.